Support for this podcast comes from U.S. Bank. U.S. Bank wants to know how you reward yourself, because they have cards that make every day more rewarding. Are you a points hoarder, cashback guru, low intro APR lover? With U.S. Bank, it's up to you, because they have the cards to fit your lifestyle. So earn more whether you're shopping at a gas station or grocery store, even while planning a staycation. Learn more at usbank.com/creditcard. U.S. Bank credit cards are issued by U.S. Bank National Association N.D. Some restrictions may apply. Member FDIC.
Prospect Podcast. I'm Clay Link here with RotoWire.com's lead prospect analyst, James Anderson. Great to be talking with you, James. How are you on this Wednesday? Before we get into it, I got something to lead things off today, that kind of the talk of the baseball world. But first, how are you?
Just really busy, as you are. Feels like I've got too much to get done before opening day, but doing our best.
Yeah, man, it's one thing after another this time of season, trying to stay afloat. Hope all of you out there are staying sane and safe this time of year. Bobby Witt was the guy I wanted to lead things off today with, Bobby Witt Jr. And, man, what a difference like 10 days makes, James. The weekend before, AL labor draft and auction, Bobby Witt Jr. did not go in that. Now, I'm really willing to and ready to shell out big time in free agency, but just crazy that here we are 10 days later talking about him having a chance to break the opening day roster. Do you buy that, or do you think, man, this kid needs to show a little bit more before a team can thrust him into that spotlight?
I wouldn't rule it out. I think that he's been so impressive this spring, and the rest of the roster is kind of ho-hum, that I don't think you can rule it out. And I think that Dayton Moore is definitely the type of general manager that's going to kind of not play the analytics sort of numbers. How can we maximize our value out of this player, like sort of treating players like a commodity and that type of thing. I don't think he's going to go that route. So I think if they do send him down, it might not be long until we see him again. Would be a very unique situation, given that, you know, he's got fewer games in full. I mean, he hasn't played in full season ball, but like this would be even more drastic than something like Juan Soto or Fernando Tatis Jr. if we're just kind of judging him based on real games in the minor leagues. But I think it's tough to also kind of gauge just how much got done in 2020 on the developmental side, because we don't have like a nice stat line of 120 games at this level, and we can say, oh, he did this, he did that. I mean, he obviously made massive strides to the point where, you know, you go back to the AZL, I think in 2019, Marco Luciano's there, CJ Abrams there, Bobby Witt's there, and Marco Luciano was way better than Bobby Witt in the AZL in 2019. And then now you flash forward and all of a sudden Bobby Witt's pushing for a roster spot, and Luciano just looked like a guy that you would expect to struggle against big league competition. But Witt's just come so far in such a short amount of time, and so much of that has come sort of behind closed doors where we haven't had access to following just how much he's improved. So I don't think you should rule it out just based on looking at his Fangraphs page and saying, well, he hasn't even played at high A or double A or anything like that. Obviously, it looks like he belongs. You know, I think what's been almost most telling to me is just the praise that his teammates have given him, kind of like on Twitter and stuff like that. I mean, you don't see multiple, you know, longtime big leaguers tout a rookie.
Yeah, saying he's like an insane talent.
Right, yeah. That's pretty rare stuff. So it does kind of give me Fernando Tatis vibes a little bit, in that, you know, this could just be happening really quickly because he's such a special player, such a special talent, that it might just be happening way ahead of schedule. I mean, in the outlook I wrote for the mag, I mean, I think in the lead sentence I said that there's speculation he could debut this season. So it wasn't like this came completely out of nowhere, but it's definitely more of a, wow, we're actually talking about opening day rather than he could push up in like June or July.
Yeah, when he started getting this crazy buzz, I did look up what our outlook said on the site, and you were prescient with that outlook. Good job, James. And yeah, this does kind of have that Fernando Tatis feel to it, where it's like, you know, he's just forcing their hand, and you know, winning his teammates over is a big deal. And I do kind of feel like there's something to doing right by the player and the player's teammates, and just they've made some moves to win now, and you never know what could happen with that fan base if a guy like Bobby Witt comes in and just lights the world on fire. Maybe spark something there in Kansas City when it comes to baseball. I mentioned, you know, 10 days ago, he didn't even go in AL labor, which is about as deep a league as you can get. Now I have Bobby Witt inside my top 200. So maybe a little bit of an overreaction, but I saw the 484-foot homer, just crazy. Then I saw the 12-pitch at bat against Urias after he fell down 0-2, just a brilliant one. And then he took Urias deep the next at bat. So it's like, and plus the contrast between Bobby Witt's 12-pitch plate appearance against Urias and then Mondesi's, where he just struck out like on three pitches. Pretty stark contrast. I just think, plus Witt made a couple really nice plays at second. It's hard to say this kid isn't one of their top position players right now. And so I think when we do the main and future mixed leagues even, I'm going to be looking to grab Bobby Witt Jr. I have him actually right now behind guys like Kirilloff and Andrew Vaughn. So what do you think? Are you with me on him for mixers, Bobby Witt?
You said you have him behind those guys?
Yeah, right behind those guys. Bunched together, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think Witt should be kind of right there with Kelnick for 2021.
Okay, so maybe I need to bump him even higher.
I would definitely take Kirilloff and Vaughn over him, because I think those guys are really kind of locked into a role with their teams. But
on
I think
opening day,
he's in that. Like I would have Kelnick behind those guys and Witt behind those guys too, just because there's uncertainty involved of when they're going to be up, and they're more kind of lottery ticket types. You know, I don't think you're getting the same type of floor that you're getting with Kirilloff and Vaughn. I wouldn't have Witt in my top 200. He'd be kind of like borderline top 300, I would say, just given the uncertainty involved. I mean, there still is going to be some swing and miss, and there might be a lot of it. And I don't think, if he made the opening day roster and had like a 40% strikeout rate in April, you shouldn't be saying, man, I can't believe he's striking out this much, right? Like, he hasn't even played in low A. So
his hands look lightning quick, though. I mean,
no, I know
those hands.
But I mean, it's
brilliant.
Just there's no safety involved here.
Yeah,
at all.
That's true. I just have those three bunch because I do feel like there's a point where you take a shot, probably not on multiple of those guys, but one of them. And you know,
it's
stash
in
season.
It's definitely to the point where he should go in a 15-team mixer, whether it's the reserve rounds or just before that. I mean, that's up to the individual drafter. But I think if I was doing a main event draft today, I wouldn't let the draft finish without selecting him, because even if you just said, I'm cutting this guy if he doesn't make the opening day roster, well, then you can cut him and you can wait to see if it happens or not. Whereas, like, if you just take some random, like, Jesus Aguilar guy, like, you know, you're not saving like $300 in fab by taking that guy at the end of the draft.
Yeah, that's true. And Bobby Witt too, leading off for that team occasionally. And, that could be a juicy spot. He's got some speed, and yeah, those hands look lightning quick. It is such a uncharted, unknown territory we're in, because you wouldn't think historically a guy like that would be ready, but we're in uncharted territory with the lost season. So we just don't know how to gauge his progress in any meaningful way. But so far this spring, it does seem like he has made leaps and bounds with that development. Bobby Witt Jr. So, James, the main topic of conversation today, the NL East prospects you wrote up, March 12th article, Farm Futures, 113 NL East prospects you need to know. Great stuff here. We will be talking on Farm Friday, too. But no XM show on Saturday this week. Tout Wars interrupting that. I just want a little programming note there. But we'll start at the very top of the NL East with Atlanta here. And Drew Waters, your number one prospect in this organization, 2017 draftee. And then Ian Anderson, who finally broke in, who did break in and had a ton of success, more than I was expecting. Christian Pache. This organization, you know, it used to be the arms. They used to have arms galore, and we thought, you know, several of them will probably pan out. Now Freed has been fine. Is Ian Anderson, though, is he going to build on what we saw, or do you think that's kind of fool's gold, what we saw from Ian Anderson last season?
I don't think it's fool's gold, but I don't think he's – I think he's getting overdrafted right now. Like he's a good big league starter. I think he proved that. He's probably more of a number three to me. And, you know, there's who knows how many innings he's going to throw, but I wouldn't project him to throw 160 innings. And the changeup's awesome. So, I mean, it's definitely a success story on the developmental side for them. You know, maybe the command really did improve that much in such a short amount of time, but I don't necessarily want to pay the price that it costs to find out right now. And even if he did improve the command that much, the fastball and the breaking ball aren't amazing offerings. So I think he's getting a little overdrafted, but he's a really good pitcher, and that was a really nice pick and developmental job by Atlanta.
Yeah, it's like that command came together really quickly for him. I'm still skeptical as to whether he can sustain that level of command, but a dominant outing, struck out 7 the other day, over 3 1/3 against the Red Sox, Ian Anderson. And then you like Drew Waters more than Christian Pache long-term. Either interest in either of these guys for redraft or for those draft and holds like you're doing for Tout Wars?
Not really for either, honestly. Pache would be fine in a draft and hold if he was going in like the 500s, but he's not. Waters, I think, probably debuts this year, but I think there's going to be a buy low opportunity on Drew Waters once he debuts, because I think he's going to strike out a bunch when he first gets to the big leagues. And so I think people are going to panic and sell low on him and try to cash him out and stuff like that. So I think there could be a buying opportunity coming up with Waters, but I don't think either of them are really going to move the needle a ton in 2021.
And then Jared Schuster, the fourth-ranked prospect. Was he their top draftee last season, Jared Schuster?
Yeah, in 2020.
Very nice. Then Braden Shoemake, Michael Harris, Ambiorius Taveras. I probably mispronounced that. Sorry, Mr. Taveras. Bryce Ball, Shea Langeliers, Kyle Muller rounding out the top 10. You wrote up 23 or listed 23 players in this organization worth monitoring. But would you say this organization for fantasy is lacking, especially compared to the rest in this division? Or do you think there actually are some gems later down the list a little ways?
It's definitely not lacking compared to this division, because this is the worst division in baseball for prospect talent and especially prospect depth. It is probably the best division in baseball for pitching prospects. I think I want to say like 10 of my top 40 pitching prospects are in this division. So they've got 25% of the top 40 pitching prospects. But the Atlanta, Philly, Washington, and the Mets are all extremely shallow systems. There's not much after the top guys. Michael Harris is the guy that there's already a decent amount of hype around him in dynasty leagues. He's got 5 category upside, and he's going to be making his full season debut this year. So he's a guy that could rise, but I mean, he's sixth in the system. So the guys after him, there's, you know, there's some potential closers, some potential number four starters, that type of thing.
Real quick note before we move on, fantasy baseball is here, and you've got to check out these new best ball leagues on Underdog. Best ball is the ultimate test of your live draft skills since there's no in-season management. That's right, draft your team, and Underdog automatically credits you with your best performing players every week. You don't need to play the waiver wire or worry about trades. It's just a draft. Who doesn't love drafting? In Underdog best ball, you can draft as many times as you want because you don't have to do any roster management, saving you loads of time. Underdog's best ball leagues are drafting right now, starting at just $3. Once the season starts, Underdog also has daily fantasy and an all-new pick'em game. Download the Underdog app now and get in on some best ball before the season starts. Enter promo code ROTOWIRE with your first deposit, and Underdog will honor a money-back guarantee during your first month. Love Underdog or get your money back with promo code ROTOWIRE. Search Underdog in your app store and enter promo code ROTOWIRE. So, James, moving on to the Miami Marlins, probably the most players you wrote up for one organization in this division. And Sixto Sanchez still tops the list. I had him in staff keeper as a minor league keeper, which is great. By the way, I know you don't care at all, James, but doing the staff keeper leagues are always fun. Got your boy Justin Topa in the reserves, which I was happy about. Thanks for the tip on Justin Topa. And I got like McClanahan, but Sixto is kind of the crown jewel of the farm system. I came in dead last year, which hurts. You know, I'm not used to that, James. So Sixto is going to kind of be leading the rotation for years to come. And then I added his teammate Trevor Rogers to the mix at $14. It was kind of quite a bidding war. But Sixto, and then JJ Bladé. I heard Eno Saris talking about him the other day too, and he made a good point that just that outfield looks pretty open. Do you see JJ Bladé maybe forcing his way into that mix this season?
Yeah, definitely. I think internally they're planning on him being up probably in the first half this year. I mean, he's that outfield. There's a ton of outfielders that are near the majors or in the majors who are kind of vying for one of those spots long term. But Bladé is the only one who's kind of in there in Sharpie, you know, like the other guys either need to impress or improve or something to kind of earn a long-term spot. But Bladé is definitely an anchor for them long-term. And so, I mean, we think Andrew Vaughn might open the year on the major league roster. I mean, he's same draft class as Vaughn. So same type of developmental track, and I don't think he's going to be up that early, but I think he could definitely be up by June.
Mentioned, I spent up to get Trevor Rogers on my staff keeper league team. That's an 18-team league. And anybody who purchased in the salary cap / auction portion, you have to keep on your big league roster. And actually, Max Meyer went in the draft, the auction portion. So, you know, that only happens with some of the top dogs, and you know, he was kind of one of the big available first-year player guys in this. So I kind of get it, but is Max Meyer the kind of guy who's going to be worth stashing as a major league keeper for, what, maybe 2-3 years?
He's got one of the higher ceilings of any pitcher in the minors. Really, really nasty stuff. He's only 6 feet tall, I think, and like 185. But he's really, really athletic. He's got this slider. It's like a low 90s slider that's just one of the nastiest sliders you're ever going to see. And he's got a upper 90s fastball. And I mean, his changeup's pretty solid too. I mean, he's definitely got – he might not look like a frontline starter, but he's got the stuff to pitch at the top of a rotation. And – you know, I don't really know what – I mean, he's kind of one of those Matthew Allen type of guys where you just kind of bubble wrap and just hope that he's healthy when he gets to the big leagues, and maybe you kind of push him a little more aggressively than you would otherwise do just to kind of get him there and get him contributing before something happens to him physically. But sky's the limit on him, so I definitely get it. Like, because in those leagues, I mean, I've played in leagues like that before, Staff Keeper League too. I mean, if you can get like a ace or a borderline ace on a really affordable contract, that can just do wonders.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of sneaky when he came up for a dollar, and I didn't really have the means to push him because I'd already filled my remaining pitching spots with TJ Antone. Freddie Peralta, did you proud with Freddie? And, you know, Antone I paid 19 for, but in the software, you know, with inflation in those kind of leagues, up at 30 in the draft software. So I thought Jeff was going to push me. He backed out at 19. I was pretty happy to get him. I actually also threw out Jason Dominguez for a buck because I'm rebuilding last place, and then Jeff went too, and I was like, ah. But that's going to be a long-term stash.
Yeah, I wouldn't have. You can't be using those big league keeper spots for a guy who's like 3 years away. Yeah,
unless you're in really bad shape like me in rebuilding. But no, I hear you. I was on the fence about throwing him out for one. I was kind of relieved Jeff went to two, so I didn't have to play that game. Actually, the reason Jason Dominguez was even available is because he went in the auction portion last year. Then that owner decided, oh, I'm not going to keep him.
Well, so part of the strategy there too is like you nominate him so that nobody can stash him in their minors.
Right. Like, yeah. Because I thought he can't be a reserve pick.
Because that's where you get the crazy value is when you can stash a Dominguez type in the minors until like after he debuts. Like that's when you get Mike Trout for like $3 or whatever. I think avoiding that scenario was smart. But I wouldn't necessarily want to be the person that had to have them on the big league squad.
Yeah, that's a long time to wait when you have 7 bench spots. I thought, because I already have Rutschman, but I felt, you know, if I'm playing for 2-3 years down the road, maybe I will. But then again, I was kind of relieved that I got taken off the hook there. Jazz Chisholm, the fourth ranked prospect in this system, the second ranked position player for you in this system. Do you see him winning that second base job? I haven't really been following that battle closely, but I know he's in the mix for an opening day starting spot.
I mean, he could win it. I've been so busy. I don't even know what Isan Diaz has been doing.
Looks like Chisholm not doing too great, batting 200, 7 Ks in 10 games, 20 at bats.
I think it would be best for Jazz's development to go to AAA and maybe to AAA for a couple months, honestly. Like I don't think you want it to get to the point where he's just striking out so much over, you know, he already debuted last year and struck out a ton. I'd rather have him set up to succeed the next time around against big league pitching. But Isan Diaz is barely worth a 40-man roster spot at this point. So maybe Jazz wins it by default. Like, the tough thing is the Marlins are trying to win this year, and Jazz, just when you factor in defense and upside, probably a better bet than Diaz. Like, I don't think Diaz is going to help them at all, but maybe they can use Birdie there a decent amount until Jazz is ready or something like that. I think just from a developmental standpoint, it'd be best for him to head to AAA.
Now, we've talked a lot about the other arms in the system, but then Edward Cabrera, the fifth-ranked prospect here, you have ahead of Trevor Rogers for the long-term value. What is the upside like compared to the other starters here that we all kind of like, Sandy, Pablo Lopez, Sixto? Does Cabrera have that kind of ceiling too?
Well, so I mentioned in the sort of write-up portion that on the update, the top 400 update that's going to come right before opening day, Rogers will have moved ahead of Cabrera. Cabrera is just not healthy right now, and he was hurt last year too. I mean, he throws 99. He is a pretty prime candidate for Tommy John surgery, and I would kind of expect that to happen. Yeah. So
unfortunate reality.
I mean, Rodgers is going to move up. Cabrera is going to move down. I think Cabrera's got as high a ceiling as anyone in this, any pitcher in this org other than Alcantara and Max Meyer. But I think that if you assume he's going to miss time with this latest arm injury, probably hasn't really been healthy for about a year. And so, you know, then you start thinking about maybe the bullpen, but it's too early to say that just yet. And even if he did have Tommy John surgery, I think he was close enough to reaching the majors that they would continue to develop him as a starter. But there's a ton of risk there. And Rodgers already kind of looks like a number three starter at least.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited to get Rodgers in the end game if you can still do that. And I know you've been drafting Sandy everywhere, your boy. I saw he struck out like 8 today, or maybe 9. I forget what it was. So you have to be feeling pretty good about that. Not 100% exposure to Sandy this year. Is it pushing 100% though? Because last year you almost had full 100%.
I did. I made it until like, I think it was like the last draft of the year or something that ruined my 100% Sandy exposure. I think I had checked my shares, my NFBC shares the other day. And, how about let's play this game. So I think I have like 70% exposure to 3 players and Sandy's one of them. Can you name the other two? I think you might be able to get one. I don't think you're going to get the other one.
Dansby Swanson.
Unfortunately, no. I have over 50% exposure to Dansby, but based on where he's going in drafts, he's going high enough that it's tough to get quite that much.
Kimbrel?
No. Unfortunately, I have very high exposure to Kimbrel, but it's not quite 70%.
I just brought up my player share, so I'll get to those momentarily. I'm trying to think who else I should know this.
One is a pitcher going outside the top 200. One is a
Cal Quantrill.
Nope.
That's probably good because it looks like Logan Allen's going to beat him out. Pitcher going outside the top 300, you said?
200.
Kikuchi.
Yep.
Yeah, he's actually my top player share too.
So seven
shares of Kikuchi.
Sandy and Kikuchi are at 70%, and then there's a hitter in this division, but he's been going outside the top 200 or so.
Let me see. Matt Phillies. I feel like it's somebody on the Braves, but I can't figure out who it is.
Austin Riley.
Oh, yeah, I should have known it. I know you're high in the Braves because we talked about them and a part of your betting article last week. And you like the Marlins over. You still like the Braves to win this division, right? I don't want to put words in your mouth. But let me recap my player shares because I haven't really, I haven't disclosed these. I know everybody's itching to find out. Kikuchi's my number one at 87.5%. So it's kind of nice. Thankfully, I'm not in many leagues with you, apparently, in the NFBC. Stephen Brault. Shout out to Ian Kahn for turning me on to Stephen Brault. Jose Altuve, then. I have a bunch of guys at 50%. So Altuve, Jamer Candelario, Marco Gonzalez. I guess I'm the sucker on Marco Gonzalez. Elias Diaz, Andrew Vaughn at 50%. Cal Quantrill, again, looks like he's kind of losing ground to Logan Allen. Shane McClanahan, Jake Lamb. Don't ask me why. Jared Kelnick. Archie Bradley, his velo's down. I'm pretty scared about him. Pete Fairbanks, Zach Gallen, and Carson Kelly. So just wanted to run through those for the interest of, disclosure, full disclosure. Anybody else here with Miami, James?
No, we can move on.
All right, so Matthew Allen with the Mets, you said kind of, you just put him in bubble wrap, hope he stays healthy until he gets to the majors. Probably not this year. Even if they lose an arm or two, Allen, a long shot to debut this season.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to be up sooner than people think. But I think we're probably more talking about, like, I think he might maybe establish himself as the top pitching prospect in the game if he stays healthy this year. And then, like, he might be a really buzzy guy in spring next year. But, I mean, there's been a lot of just kind of noise out of Mets camp about just him kind of being closer to the being big league ready than people think, and just really impressing guys like DeGrom and stuff. So I wouldn't completely rule it out, but I mean, I think that would be a lot to ask. I mean, he turns 20 shortly after opening day, so I don't think they're gonna plan on him being up this year.
Yeah, I just look at, you know, the depth could be tested there with Joey Lucchesi and those types as, you know, swingmen. David Peterson I kind of like, but you just never know. Maybe an injury or two. Then the next ranked prospect here in the Mets organization for you is Pete Crow Armstrong. He was a 2020 draftee, so he was available last night in the Staff Keeper League reserve rounds, and I'll just run through it. He went with the 11th pick in the first round of the reserves. I went Austin Martin to kick things off again, last place, so I get the first pick. Austin Martin, Nick Gonzalez, Zach Veen, Michael Bush, Wilman Diaz, Edward Olivares, Ryan Weathers, Asa Lacy, Garrett Mitchell, Pedro Leon, then Jan Levine took Pete Crow Armstrong.
Who's the sucker who took Edward Olivares?
Hall of Famer Todd Zoll. So we know he loves Olivares. But I do think, you know, those early reserve round picks, you have to go prospects.
I mean, yeah.
Because those prospects on minor league deals are the most valuable asset in that league. So yeah, Zola's kind of new to this league, but Edward Olivares, the one who doesn't really belong here. Jan is a Mets fan, so you know he's probably happy to get Pete Crow Armstrong. Again, second ranked prospect in this organization. His mom was in what movie? Rookie of the Year, maybe.
Little Big League.
Okay. That's really like his claim to fame for me. That's about all I know. Yeah. But 18 years old, he's still got plenty of time to make a name for himself on the field.
Yeah, I love him as much as you can love a prep hitting prospect. I mean, he's got five tool potential. I think he's going to surprise people with how much power he hits for. That was kind of the question kind of coming out, was everyone liked the hit tool. Defense, you know, he has all the tools on defense. He's got plus speed, plus arm, but I think there's more power there than people realize. And I mean, you just high school hitters are just so risky. I think you got to be careful not to overrank them initially, but he could be a big riser if he hits this year.
Nice. And then a little ways down the list, Khalil Lee was a recent addition to this organization, brought in as part of the three-way deal with the Royals and Red Sox, with Andrew Benintendi heading to Kansas City in that deal. So Khalil Lee you have as one of the few in this organization who could debut this season and potentially make an impact. But do you see what the Mets saw with Khalil Lee, or was this like kind of a buy low for them, or how would you classify Khalil Lee and his standing in this organization?
I would say a reclamation project for them, a conscious sell low for Kansas City.
Okay.
And I think Lee is he's closer to being out of the top 400 than back inside the top 200. It just has not been able, like the Royals worked so hard with him to try to unlock that approach and get him to lift the ball and tap into his raw power, just couldn't do it. And he, you know, he looked pretty lost at the plate. I think this spring was sent down to minor league camp the other day. I mean, the speed, it's easy to dream on, like he has the raw tools to be like a 25-25 guy or maybe like a 20-30 guy, but got to hit. And I don't know if he's going to hit.
Well, before we move on, a word from our friends over at StableDuel. Baseball has always been America's pastime, but a close second is horse racing. We've got the best way to get in on the action. StableDuel brings a new way to play the races against your friends. Similar to what we only know in fantasy football and baseball, you select your team with your stable of horses and compete against other stables for big money prizes. Watch your stable move up the leaderboard as your horses accumulate points based on where they finish the race. The app is free to download, and they offer free games so you can learn how to play at zero risk. Don't know anything about horse racing? Neither do I. But don't worry, the app has all you need to know with free data on each horse's record, as well as a risk number, speed number, and value number for your best selections. This is the first game of its kind in horse racing, and you don't want to miss out. Download the StableDuel app now and get in the game. Play, race, win with StableDuel. So continuing on here, James, guys like Thomas Zapucki, others who have been kind of hanging around this organization, Mark Vientos, anybody here who you think, you know, could bounce back and become relevant, or are these guys all, you know, kind of waiver wire fodder in most dynasty leagues?
Yeah, it's not good. I'd say after Alexander Ramirez at 7, I don't really want to be rostering any of these guys in dynasty. There's some guys who could either bounce back or break out, kind of lower down the list, but not likely enough for me to have them ranked in the top 400.
So on to the Phillies. Spencer Howard still hanging around and prospect eligible. Of course, he debuted, but only 6 starts, 24 and a third innings last year. You can kind of just take a red marker, cross the line through it, because it didn't really tell us much. He probably wasn't healthy, and now he's already dealing with back spasms. This comes with the territory, but how much have the recent injuries dinged Spencer Howard in your eyes?
Stuff looked better this spring before the back spasms, so it definitely would throw out what he did on the field with the big league club last year. Like that's just not really factoring into my evaluation of him at all. But durability's been an issue. I think he's still got a pretty high ceiling. It was nice to at least see him kind of flashing the stuff that he showed back in the AFL in 2019. But yeah, I mean, he's kind of trending down a little bit, and I mean, they could really use him. Like I wouldn't be counting on the back of that rotation to be very productive this year. So they could definitely use him, but got to stay healthy. And I think it'd probably be good for him to just get into a bit of a rhythm, make a few starts at AAA, and just kind of get some confidence there before facing big league hitters again.
Yeah, I think that'd probably be best for Spencer Howard. But you're right, they're probably going to need him. You look at that rotation, we got Matt Moore back in the States, Chase Anderson, maybe Vince Velasquez, maybe Ivan Nova, but yikes. I mean, past Eflin, who's I'm not really sold on either, it's pretty shaky back there. So, yeah, I mean, they're probably going to need him. And they're probably going to need a guy like Francisco Morales. Not probably going to look at Mick Abel, last year's draftee, probably unrealistic to think he could be up, but Francisco Morales, you think they're going to need him to not only, you know, pitch some innings, but some important innings?
If they're going into the season needing Francisco Morales, then I feel really good about that Phillies under that I was supporting in my article last week. Morales has closer stuff. I think he's more likely to be an impact reliever for this team than to get actual starts. I think that they're going to still develop him as a starter long term. There were some reports from instructs that his changeup started showing flashes, but mostly still kind of a two pitch guy, two really good pitches, you know, 270 grade pitches. So could be their closer of the future. But I'm interested to see where they assign him, because he doesn't have much upper level experience, but he's on the 40 man now. So maybe he goes to AA. That's going to be an aggressive assignment for him. I hope that he could handle it. And, if he gets to the big leagues this year and is pitching out of that big league bullpen, I think something probably went right. and that would be a success for him. But still just kind of seeing how that changeup develops and how the command develops with him.
Bryson Stott, the fourth-ranked prospect here for Philadelphia for you, James. And then Johan Rojas, number five. And then a little ways down the list, more than a little ways, actually, barely holding on to a spot on the top 20, Mickey Moniak. He went in the reserve rounds of the Staff Keeper League draft last night to Chris Liss, who had to make sure, you know, he was still there and prospect eligible because he debuted, but fewer than 20 games, so he was eligible as a minor leaguer in this game, or in this particular league. And he seems like he's catching some renewed buzz a little bit, just given his spring. He's batting .333 with a couple homers. You're not, clearly with this ranking, you're not sold on him in this recent surge.
No.
All right.
I mean, he's got the pedigree, but no. I mean, the words fifth outfielder were getting thrown around a lot with Moniak over the offseason.
Yeah, here are some of the names who went in the seventh round of the reserves last night. I took Brett Gardner, Michael A. Taylor, just to give you an idea of like where everybody else is valuing Mickey Moniak. Leury Garcia, Merrill Kelly, Kevin Newman, Odubel Herrera, Jake Fraley. So, yeah, I mean, Mickey Moniak's kind of an afterthought, but it seems like that's kind of where he deserves to be. It sounds like he's very fringe, even for a deep league like this. Anybody else you want to talk about here? Pretty thin system there in Philadelphia.
Yeah, this might be my least favorite system in baseball. So we can move on.
Cade Cavalli kicking things off for the Nats. He went in this league, and I was kind of like, I just had a bunch of pitching keepers, so I wasn't really looking at Cavalli. But I kind of he actually lasted quite a while, fourth round. What's the upside for Cavalli, right-hander, 2020 draftee? Is this like a number two starter upside?
At least, yeah. I mean, he's really, really talented. He looks the part of a frontline guy, has the pitches, just about command for him, and staying healthy. I mean, he didn't have a super clean medical history, but I mean, if he stays healthy and he throws strikes, he's going to be an absolute stud. So I think that sounds like he went for pretty good value last night. I mean, he could move up. Like, he could be a top five pitching prospect a year from now. He could be a top 10 pitching prospect a year from now.
Very nice. Jackson Rutledge, another right-hander in the system, drafted the year before Cavalli. Compared to Cavalli, is the ceiling pretty similar? How would you compare those two?
I think there's more risk. There's more bullpen risk, I think, with Rutledge. I wouldn't necessarily project either guy to end up there unless injuries kind of force him there. But I mean, Rutledge is like 6'8", and you don't see too many guys make it as a starting pitcher at that height. And there's just, you know, there's a lot to sync up in the delivery and everything. But he's got a, and both these guys are like 98, 99, pretty easy. So that, I mean, the Nationals definitely have a type in the draft. They're looking for big guys that they can envision pitching towards the top of their rotation. And both these guys fit the bill. I just think Cavalli's got a deeper repertoire, and I would project his command to be better than Rutledge's.
Now, James, I know, you know, talking with you over many years, you look forward to when guys graduate from prospect status, so you no longer have to rank them. And you probably hate these questions about where guys who have graduated would slot in if they were still prospect eligible. But Carter Kieboom, like, I'm fully out. Like, I don't think he's very good. Are you still holding out hope for Kieboom? Again, I hate to put you on the spot and ask you these kinds of questions, but would he, if prospect eligible, still be like a top five-ish guy here?
In this org, he would be a top five guy.
But it's close.
In most orgs, he wouldn't. I wouldn't, you know, if he's
a top
five guy,
he should be a starter.
It's not great. I mean, I think the problem with Kieboom is, yeah, he's been terrible so far, but he was also just way overranked. And I might have been part of the problem. I don't think I was the biggest offender. I mean, I never had Kieboom in my top 10. I don't think I ever had him in my top 15. He was probably kind of a fringe top 20 guy. at the height of his, of where I was ranking him. And I think other people got carried away, and it's, he's just, he was overranked. I mean, he never projected for a plus hit tool and plus power. Like, I think it was more kind of like, could be a plus hit tool with like 20 homer power, could be plus power with like a 50 grade hit tool. But I didn't see both those things coming for him. And he's just been completely overmatched. I wouldn't be in my top 100. I think it'd be kind of like a borderline top 150 guy if he was still eligible for the top 400, just based on proximity, not because I think it's going to work out necessarily. But I mean, he's in the majors and he's got a pretty clear path to playing time.
Yeah, he had that one run at AAA with the 2019 juiced ball that was just crazy. But otherwise he's been good on the farm, but just, you know, in terms of like fantasy and category juice, it's been pretty underwhelming. This spring, I mean, he's been really bad. A 462 OPS, 8 Ks and 25 at-bats. And I know that they are intent on giving him a fair look this season, but it's like he's already trying to play his way out of a starting spot, Carter Kieboom. Maybe they turn to Josh Harrison. Maybe Starlin Castro moves over to the third. I just don't see him, and you don't see really any drafts where Carter Kieboom gets taken even as a projected starter.
No. I mean, I think what probably makes the most sense is to, like, I think Luis Garcia is a better player than Kieboom and has a better chance of developing into a good regular. So I might prefer to just move, yeah, you know, like you said, Castro over to third and see what Garcia can do. Cause,
maybe they should have brought in Michael Franco, but good thing he went to Baltimore.
Yeah, that's a victory lap that I will never tire of you taking.
You're giving me some grief. I mean, kind-hearted, light-hearted grief on the show. The XM show last week, just about such a ridiculous thing to need to have break my way in labor.
Hey, you got it, though.
I did, and now I wish I'd just gotten Bobby Witt Jr. instead of Wander Franco.
Yeah.
If I had read that right, things could be looking way up. But now I'm going to have to spend, like, what, 80% of my budget on Witt?
Think how pumped you'd be right now if you had foreseen that and gotten Witt as, like, your final reserve or something.
That would have been so nasty. Instead, I took Jordan Luplo or somebody like that.
I don't think you're going to have to go to 80 unless when does the Fab run? When does the first Fab?
I think there's probably a Fab period before the season starts, although I think we would need to be officially on the roster in order to be added, though. So he would have to be officially, like, contract purchased.
You can't stash guys you didn't draft.
No.
That's a shame.
Yes, I really blew it. That is crazy. Like, 10 days ago, I didn't see this coming at all. Now Dayton Moore is acknowledging on the radio that he's keeping an open mind. And like you said, like, his teammates were tweeting, like, this kid's insane. Like, this kid's the real deal. You just don't see that often. It does seem like Fernando Tatis' situation with, like, his own teammates went to the owner of the team. Like, this kid needs to be on the roster. Like, I think that kind of pressure from his other teammates may play a role.
Well, and it's just, how do you look your clubhouse? Like, what do you say to them when you're just like, yeah, this guy's going down? It's like, you know, how do you justify that? And how do you get buy-in from everyone? I mean, you know, Mike Matheny wants him on that roster.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. I do think I'd probably go around 80 out of my $100 Fab budget on Witt, just because that'd save me. I mean, that'd give me $21 moves throughout the year.
Well, so if they announced he broke camp with the team, you probably would have to go 80. But
81.
I was going to say, like, if you were allowed to stash and he was getting sent to AAA, I think you would maybe, like, bid twice as much as the next highest bid at that point, because I don't know if anyone can match your appetite for stashing in that league.
Doubtful. But yeah, my offense could need the help, even with Michael Franco landing with the O's. I owe one out into the universe, you know, good karma getting that break. But now I wish that $6 I'd spend on Wander would have mean, I probably could have gotten Witt. I know I could have got Witt for a buck. Then I could have spent the remaining five somewhere else. And so, yeah, I wish I'd seen that, but a lot can change in 10 days. As we wrap things up with this NL East overview here, James, anything else in this national system, anybody else? I don't really recognize hardly any of these names, frankly.
No, I mean, like, most of the interesting guys after those top two starters are recent international signees who are pretty untested and pretty risky. I'm just cranking away at this NL Central and NL West, and NL Central will be up in a day or two. NL West will probably be up Monday. Then I'm going to do volume 2.0, probably the final volume of the rookie tiers for 2021, because so, like you said, so much has changed. I mean, Bobby Witt's going to be pretty high in that. Trevor Rogers going to move up in that. Guys like Paven Smith are going to move up in that. And that'll hopefully be out next week. And then big top 400 update before the start of the season. So a lot to kind of squeeze in here before opening day. But, I just can't wait for opening day so that we could stop. Baseball Twitter right now is just the worst. I mean, people are just arguing just to argue about strategy and process and all that stuff. And
who planted a flag first?
Are you allowed to plant this flag? Are you allowed to take this victory lap and all that type of stuff? It's just
some policing brutal going on. Yeah. It's, I tried to stay off mostly for my own mental health. I should just delete the Twitter app because I'm always, even when I'm just down, have downtime, I just second nature to pick it up, look for that blue icon. It's a sickness, James. It's a sickness. I can't wait to do our main event next week. I think our KDS, Kentucky Derby system, may run today. I know we talked about changing it up, but I think we're left at 1 through 15 right now. Hope you're okay with that, buddy.
Where do we need to be to get Witt?
Yeah, well, let's plan everything around Witt in the 11th or something crazy.
We're just going to avoid shortstop and save a spot for Bobby Witt.
And Vladdy. I might have to – I'll make some concessions elsewhere if we can get Vlad and Bobby Witt Jr. You can't have everything you want, though, so I'm fully prepared to miss out. I think I may do a second main, but I can't wait to share that with you, dude. That's going to be fun. A week from today, we gotta talk more and get our strategy set. Anything else you want to mention before we sign off? I know you're busy, man, so thanks for taking the time to share some insight.
Nah, I'm good.
Awesome. Well, thank you for listening. Check us out on Friday on Farm Friday on SiriusXM Fantasy Sports Radio, and we'll be back next week, Wednesday, on the RotoWire Prospect Podcast.